read my short story called The Letter. Unfortunately, I'm over the word limit, so I'm going to be starting the story a quarter of the way through. Very briefly, just to give you some background, the story is about a character called Horesh, who lives on a farm in India and works as a servant in the main house. He is married to Hemlata, who is the maid. I talk about the mistress. The mistress refers to the mistress of the household. And there is a character called Balu Balwant, who is the manager of the farm. "Horesh, 1 minute," Balu called to the slight figure that was heading back in the direction of the house. "A letter came for you this morning." He passed the grimy colored envelope, thick with scattered thumbprints, that had taken 3 weeks to reach its destination into the man's hands. Horish's eyebrows raised, but he accepted the letter silently. Letters from his village were few and far between, and on the rare occasion something did arrive, it was usually to herald a marriage or mourn a relative's demise. However, today he instinctively felt the information that was concealed within this sliver of paper was of a very different nature. "Thank you, Dada," he said to Balu, aware the man he called elder brother was watching him carefully. "I'll open it later." He casually pushed the envelope into his back pocket, feeling the heat of Balu's stare on his back as he walked away. The rest of the morning and most of the afternoon passed in following around the two electricians that had been sent from the city to service the various fans and coolers situated around the house in preparation for the hot summer ahead. The mistress had given specific instructions to Horesh to remain with them at all times, not only to make sure they did their job properly, but also to ensure they didn't steal any of her expensive crystal that she had obtained from abroad. While they dismantled a fan from the ceiling in the drawing room, Horesh guiltily eyed a porcelain figurine that had toppled over the week before while he had been moving a table and had broken cleanly in two. He had painstakingly stuck it back with the help of an out-of-date tube of araldite glue, pressing the two halves together in his calloused fingertips until he had been sure they wouldn't come apart. He glanced at the figurine again, the tilt of its haughty head pointed in his direction. So far, his accident had gone unnoticed. He hoped it would stay that way. After the men left, it was past lunchtime. Normally, he would have returned to his house to eat the light meal Hemlata would have prepared. But today was Tuesday, and it was his fasting day. He would not eat again until the evening. He felt somewhat relieved that he would not be seeing his wife until later. They didn't have much to say to each other, and he had started to feel more and more tense in her company as the months went by. The other two maids who worked in the house were still around. One was in the courtyard washing clothes, and the other upstairs ironing the previous day's dried ones. Horesh touched the back pocket of his trousers where the letter sat and decided he would wait until they left before opening it. In the meantime, he walked down to the basement and opened a wooden cupboard, rummaging around amongst rolls of bubble packing, old bath mats, and bottles of mosquito repellent until he found a container of black pepper kernels. He lifted this out, together with several sheets of thick tissue paper, which he placed under his arm and carried the items back upstairs. In the storeroom, which sat next to the kitchen, he removed all the dry food and then used a cloth to wipe the various shelves and drawer units. He lined these with the tissue, carefully folding the excess underneath so they formed a clean line, and then liberally sprinkled the black peppercorns over the bases. Satisfied that he had done a good enough job to prevent any ants or silverfish from being drawn to the room, he replaced the various jars of pulses and condiments before turning off the light and closing the door behind him. "I know what is in the letter." Hemlata's voice made him jump as he turned around. "You startled me. Why are you creeping up on me, woman?" He had been on the verge of asking how she even knew there was a letter, but stopped himself. He had been working here 8 years, and he should have known by now that news, good, bad, or indifferent, spread very quickly in such a small environment. "What is in the letter? How can you know what my people have sent me when I haven't opened it, and even I don't know?" "Well?" "It doesn't matter," Hemlata replied, looking away. Horesh threw his hands up in the air. "If it doesn't matter, then why say it?" he cried, exasperated. He pushed past her, leaving her standing by herself in the kitchen. Towards late afternoon, he stretched his back and yawned, glancing at the clock on the wall which showed 4:30. The maids would have definitely left by now. The rest of the farm workers would either be in the fields or trying to catch a sneaky nap away from the alert eyes of Balu Balwant. Now he could read his letter in peace without the fear of being disturbed. He went out the back door, stopping for a minute on the lawn to take a few gulps of water from the hose pipe embedded in the soil next to the rose bushes. The cooling liquid refreshed him, and in his cupped hand he took some and liberally splashed his face with it. There was a large peepal tree that he had always liked, and he headed towards this. Its expansive branches fanned out, with copious amounts of bright green leaves forming a canopy above its thick, stumpy structure. Horesh sat down, crossing his legs and leaning his back against the base, shifting restlessly against the ridges of bark until he settled into a comfortable position. He pulled the envelope out from his pocket, running his fingertip over the writing on the front. He had thought until then that the letter was from his grandfather, but whoever had addressed it had a firm hand, and the shaky, spidery handwriting that belonged to him was not evident. Suddenly impatient to know what was inside, he slid a thumb along the seal and pulled out the single sheet of lined paper. His eyes skimmed over the short letter with its margin down the left-hand side and its dog-eared edges that looked like it had been torn out of an exercise book. Horesh, it read, "This is your cousin Shambhu writing for our grandfather. He has not been too well recently and has asked me to tell you what is on his mind. We had learned from our cousin Rahul, who had come to visit you at Chandra Bhavan Farm last month, that you have still not had a child, not even a girl. After 5 years of marriage, it is not something that can go on. You are the eldest son of Ram Singhji, and all your brothers have had several sons, all except you. We accept that it is your wife who is at fault. Rahul had told us that you seem open to taking on another wife, one who will be sure to be fertile and carry many healthy and strong sons for you. Our grandfather does not know how much longer he will live for, and it is his wish that you marry again as soon as possible so he may see his grandson. We have sent a photo along with this letter of a girl from the local village. Her name is Rani. Her complexion is wheatish. She is probably about 22 years old and will provide a good dowry, including a television and China dinner set, should you marry him. Please give your reply at the soonest so we can make preparations. Shambhu." Horesh reached inside the envelope and pulled out a small black and white passport-sized photograph of the girl in question. It was just a headshot, but showed a pretty young woman wearing a sari and with a cascade of dark hair that draped attractively over one shoulder. She smiled straight at the camera, but there was a shyness in her almond-shaped eyes as well. Her nose had been pierced, and a large silver hoop hung from it. Distracted by a rustling sound, he looked up to see a large male peacock rapidly ruffling its feathers. Its tail splayed in a riot of colors, and with chest puffed out, he was in the middle of a dancing display for the smaller, more drab-looking females that stood mere meters away. Horesh admired it as it paraded and preened in front of him, while the peahens did all they could to show they were more interested in pecking at the insects hidden within the long blades of grass. He looked down at the photograph again. It was pleasing to his eyes. He smiled to himself, even as the troublesome thought of how he was going to convince the mistress of him marrying again ran through his mind. He had hesitantly raised the subject with her a few weeks ago, and she had reacted with anger and displeasure. His forehead creased in the memory of her lecturing him on how selfish and insensitive he was in wanting a second wife just because Hemlata was unable to conceive. She had personally taken his wife to several fertility specialists in the city and paid for the various tests and treatment that she had been advised to take, but to no avail. Hemlata had a problem that no amount of help or medicine could cure. He winced as he remembered the painful day the mistress had reluctantly informed him of the severity of the situation, watching his face as the light slowly extinguished from his eyes. She had gone on to suggest that he adopt one of his many brothers' children who still lived in the village. They would be glad, she said, of the opportunity of one of their sons or daughters being handed over to him to provide a better education for them and a healthier environment to grow up in. But Horish had shaken his head. This was not something he was even willing to consider. He wanted his own child, and nothing less would do. His thoughts turned to Hemlata and how he was going to tell her of his decision. It was not a subject he had ever raised with her, but she had a woman's intuition, and several times she had hinted at knowing what was on his mind. He sighed, bringing his legs up to his chest and leaning his head against his knees wearily. She showed such little interest in anything these days. In fact, they barely even had conversations anymore, and when they did, it usually consisted of him having to lecture her on something or the other, or asking her to mix with the other women on the farm. They would call out to her to come into their homes and join them for a cup of tea, or sit with them as they watched their children play, but she would always refuse. When he had told Hemlata that they would never be able to have children, she had turned her face away from him and towards the wall, her expression barely altering. She had not shed a single tear, shown bitterness, or cursed fate, not even once. Instead, she had simply announced that it was God's will, and to all intents and purposes had dismissed the devastating news from her mind. All she did was to wake up in the morning, complete her chores in silence, and go through the day with robot-like precision. What had happened to her? How had she gone from being a lively, vibrant woman to one who was insensitive, unfeeling, devoid of all emotion? The only thing she showed interest in was making sure her clothes matched. In fact, she was making it so easy for him to reach this decision of remarriage, he thought to himself. His mind flashed back to their wedding day. They had been two nervous 20-year-olds, walking around the sacred fire seven times against the dramatic backdrop of the Aravali Hills. Their hands had been bound together tightly in red cloth by the priests, whose lilting chanting echoed throughout the ceremony. The sense of pride Horish had felt in his bride had been immense. In the days that had followed their marriage, after he had brought her as a bride back to the farm, he had rushed through his daily chores, eager to get back home, just to be near her. He had been on his own for so long, and then, all of a sudden, there was this bright young girl with her infectious laugh who made him smile and forget how exhausted he was at the end of a day's work. Impulsively, in the first few weeks, he had escaped the watchful eyes of the mistress to meet Hemlata for a few seconds, just so he could see her gasp in surprise as he entered their house. They had laughed together over the fact that despite her growing up in a family of six men, five brothers and her father, she remained a hopeless cook. He got used to being served a meal of overcooked food, bits of which had been desperately scraped from the bottom of a charred pan, and chapatis that were every shape but round. He would look at her from the corner of his eye as he undressed at night, watching as she rubbed coconut oil between her palms before massaging it through her long black hair that she was so proud of. He never tired as he stared, entranced by her nimble fingers as they moved deftly, threading her hair into a thick plait. "You'll become like the rest of us, just give it time," Balu had told Horish with a wink. "A man needs some excitement in his life, can't go back to the same woman night after night. It won't be long before you stray." But he hadn't. He was a simple man of few needs, and now that he was married, all that he needed to complete his happiness was a child. In the first few years, they had patiently waited for her to conceive. During that time, the master's second son married, and within 12 months, he and his wife were expecting their first child. 2 years passed, and they announced that there was a second one on the way. A year after that, when Hemlata began working as a maid in the main house, they still had nothing of their own to celebrate. Over time, there was a subtle shift in their relationship. Nothing earth-shattering had happened, but small changes built up over a period of time that seemed to cause an unspoken divide between them. He stopped watching her oil and braid her hair. More often than not, he would complain of the strong smell as he got into bed with her at night. He no longer teased her over her burnt rice or misshapen chapatis. To the contrary, he found it irritating that even after so many years, she still couldn't cook. He regularly grumbled under his breath on the nights he was forced to go to bed on a stomach only half full. He didn't ache to get back to her at the end of the day anymore. Even if he was drained with tiredness, he would find a solitary spot somewhere and lie down on the grass, gazing up at the night sky and thinking of his village, which lay thousands of kilometers away. He remembered how, as a boy, he had lain awake on countless summer nights, wondering where it was in this vast country that he was destined to live out his life. He sighed and shook his head wearily. Ultimately, he knew he had to appease his family and ensure his line would continue. It was getting late and he was tired. Tomorrow morning, he would speak to Hemlata. He got up, brushed the leaves and bits of grass from his trousers, pushed the letter and photograph into his pocket, and slowly walked back to the house. The mistress had told him that she and the master would be having dinner in the city that evening, so since he had no food to cook for them, he had only to tie the dogs up in their usual spots for the night before returning to his own home. He tidied up a little, and then let himself out through the front door, turning on the porch light in the driveway before heading back home. Inside, the small shack was almost in darkness. The structure consisted of a small sitting area, a rectangular-shaped kitchen, a bedroom and tiny bathroom. Apart from the wooden door at the entrance, the rest of the rooms were partitioned by a simple cotton cloth. Seeing his dinner laid out on the table with only one plate and a single steel glass beside it, Horesh guessed that Hemlata had eaten her food and gone to sleep. He felt relieved, only to have the feeling replaced by a twinge of guilt. He quickly filled his plate and ate, refilling it a second time, and then quenching his thirst by gulping down two glasses of water. In the bedroom, he swiftly changed his clothes and crawled into bed, feeling Hemlata's small body next to him. "Are you awake?" he asked. There was no response. He closed his eyes, but it was a long while before he fell asleep. Horesh awoke to the muffled sounds of sobbing. For a few moments, he felt disorientated, confused by the unfamiliar sounds he was hearing. Slowly, he turned on his side towards Hemlata. He stared in the darkness at her back, watching the outline of her shoulders rise and fall. He lifted a hand to place on her in a gesture of comfort, but it froze in midair, and he found himself struggling to lower it and touch the figure lying so close to him that he could feel the warmth of her skin against his. He didn't know how long he stayed in that position, in that no man's land, of resting against her slight frame, yet not really touching her either. Uncomfortable and uneasy, he finally turned away and onto his other side, so he faced the curtainless window, eyes wide open, staring out into the blackness, unable to go back to sleep. Outside, the barking and howling of stray dogs started somewhere in the distance, and mingled with Hemlata's soft crying. Horesh did not know how long the tortured sounds went on, but eventually his wife's breathing grew deep and shallow, and he knew when he could make out the shape of his trousers and shirt that he had left hanging on the chair that dawn was about to break. Thank you. Thank you.